Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio with your host, Jody Johnston Powell, licensed social worker, certified family life educator, second generation parent educator, and author of the award-winning book, The Parents Tool Shop, The Universal Blueprint for Building a Healthy Family. For over 25 years, Jody has been training parents and family service professionals nationwide and serving as a parenting expert to the media worldwide. Now, through the Parents Tool Talk radio show and teleseminar series, Jody shares her practical advice and introduces you to other experts who can give you proven, effective advice on the issues that matter most to parents. So get ready to be informed, entertained, and enlightened as we join Jody now.
Hello, and welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio. I'm so glad you've joined us today. I'm Jody Johnston Powell, author of The Parents Tool Shop, and your host. And our topic today is confronting emotional abuse. And we will confront the issue of emotional abuse, defining it, examining it in detail, and offering real-world advice on what to do and what not to do when you see emotional abuse occurring. Before we dive into that discussion, I'd love to have you participate in that discussion today. And so let me tell you how to ask questions during the live show. You can either give us a call at 347-205-9654. That's 347-205-9654. And then press the 1 key on your telephone keypad to let us know that you have a question. Or you can go to the Parents Tool Talk chat room, and my producer, Chris Gooley, will take your question and pass it on. Just go to parentstooltalk.com and click the play/chat button just underneath today's show title and description. I also want to give a quick reminder to all foster parents to check in at the beginning and the end of the show if you'd like to qualify for continuing education credits. Just call in or use the chat room. For detailed instructions, you can go to parentstooltalk.com/links. That's www.parentstooltalk.com/links. And just click on the link that says CEUs for foster parents. Now, let me introduce my special guest expert today. Sarah K. Smullins is a licensed diplomate in clinical social work and a trained family therapist and educator. She has been certified as a group psychotherapist by the American Group Psychotherapy Association and as a certified family life educator by the National Council on Family Relations. A recipient of a Lifetime Achievement Award by the Pennsylvania Chapter of the National Association of Social Work for her groundbreaking work in the codification of 5 invisible cycles of emotional abuse, Sarah Kay is the best-selling author of Whoever Said Life is Fair and Setting Yourself Free, Breaking the Cycle of Emotional Abuse in Family, Friendship, Love, and Work. Her paper, Achieving an Emotional Sense of Direction, can be found on her website, sarahkaysmullins.com. That's SarahKaySmullins.com. And we'll get that to you again a little bit later in the show. Her model is described in greater detail in a paper called The Codification and Treatment of Emotional Abuse in Structured Group Therapy, which was accepted by which was peer-reviewed in the International Journal of Group Psychotherapy and published in January 2010. So congratulations on all of those accolades. You are well deserving of them. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Jody.
Yes, and thank you for being with us on the show today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Well, this is such an important topic. As many of our listeners may know, I've been in the Child Protective Service field for almost 30 years. And so I've been on many sides of emotional abuse in terms of being a caseworker, then training foster parents and training caseworkers. And actually, in my own upbringing, I had a brother that I would probably say was emotionally abusive. Well, I wouldn't make that sound like it was questionable. He was.
Right.
And those of you who have read my book are kind of familiar with my background. And even though I am the child of parent educators, that doesn't make a family immune from having problems or having children who have serious issues, and he had some mental health issues.
Well, I know that. This is a pervasive, invisible, malignant problem that is rarely recognized as it does its damage.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you could give us just kind of a generic definition. I mean, we're going to be going into a lot more specifics later, but if you could just give us a really generic definition of emotional abuse and maybe how prevalent it is, we could kind of help our listeners kind of get on board with what it is we're going to be talking about today.
Emotional abuse happens invisibly in interactions in families. That's where it usually begins. And the people who endure it experience a complete lack of power and self-esteem. And they know something is really, really wrong. They feel sad. They feel invisible. They feel helpless. They feel insecure. But they don't know what to call what they're feeling and experiencing and the anxieties and the lack of hope and confidence that they feel. And they don't have words and understanding of what it is they're enduring. And, you know, we'll go into specifics about the various cycles that are manifested in emotional abuse and how they play themselves out. But people who experience emotional abuse just feel sad, helpless, without power, and without self-esteem. And every time they start to feel better a little bit, they're hit again. And you know what, Jody? It doesn't just happen in homes. It happens in schools. It happens in community centers. Very sadly, it happens in centers with religious leaders who abuse and who no one understands what they're doing. And what I have seen clinically after a professional life that very much parallels yours is that the cycles never end. They pass from generation to generation unless there's some kind of an intervention and it's stopped. And sometimes if someone is just feeling better and says, you can't talk to me that way, you can't treat me that way, you can't demean me that way, you can't wipe me out that way, that's when emotional abuse can morph into physical or sexual violence. It's always there with physical and sexual abuse and violence. It's always there invisibly side by side with those two. But it also exists independently and is a forerunner of physical and sexual violence.
Okay. And so what you're saying is that when people are experiencing that, if they try to stand up for themselves, it may often backfire on them and actually get worse.
Yes, it's you know, this is why when I suspect emotional abuse and someone calls me for a consultation, I never see a couple together. Because what can happen if a partnership arrives and one person talks about his or her loneliness, feelings of being demeaned, not being able to express oneself with confidence, fear of the reaction of a partner, the partner in the office can seem perfectly fine and wonderful and then leave and really, really put the other partner who's being abused in harm's way. And in situations like that, that's when children are also in harm's way, trying to protect a parent who is being screamed at, demeaned, or violated physically or sexually.
So if it's so invisible, and I mean, it's not invisible to the people who are experiencing it, but in terms of trying to, like you had said, if somebody calls you for a consultation or somebody were to report that to a professional, how well is it addressed by professionals then if is it more of a, and this is actually a question that someone had submitted to us in advance from Michigan, and just her bottom line question is, whether or not are there, and if there's objective guidelines, I imagine you're going to share those more with us later.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds almost as though there's an element of subjective perception about whether or not someone feels, if they're the victim of mistreatment, whether or not they feel it's abusive or not. Seems like that would be a more subjective. When they go to a professional, however, how well do they handle those kinds of situations in terms of being able to really identify whether or not emotional abuse is going on?
Well, you know, on my website, I have a checklist. It's called an emotional abuse inventory, where people can look at their feelings and reactions to people and get an indicator if they're being emotionally abused, such as are the people they live with allowing them to speak, and are they ridiculed when they open their mouths, and are they frightened in interaction and anxious in interaction with the people who supposedly love them?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, these are indicators. Am I a prisoner in my home, or can I talk? And if I'm alone with someone, will he or she act differently toward me, a brother, a sister, a parent, a cousin, an aunt, an uncle, a caretaker? Will those people, once we are alone, frighten me?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a matter of understanding I am a competent person, and if I'm nervous around somebody, there's a good reason, and I have to go talk with someone about it.
And
I don't have to live this way. I shouldn't live this way. And the other thing, Jody, is that if you are living this way, you're raising children to endure this kind of demeaning experience also. As I said, when people are emotionally abused, the cycle goes from generation to generation, often escalating in its damage.
Mm-hmm. And we've been talking about, it sounds as though some of the contexts that you've mentioned have been couples and how then that models for children. How can parents themselves recognize whether or not what they're doing is abusive? Every parent is going to get angry. There's going to be some point where most of us are going to say something that we regret.
Right, of course.
How can parents know whether or not what they're doing, I would imagine there may be some defensive denial there in terms of wanting to look at, but say you had a parent who was open to looking at themselves, how could they tell whether or not what they were doing was abusive emotionally?
Well, that's a great question. And it's so wonderful when parents think about these things and want to understand that it's so easy to abuse a helpless child out of your own neediness or your own wishes for them that may not be good for them. And I think it gets back to a philosophy of child raising, which is, I don't own my children. I'm there to give them love and limits. I'm there to love them the best way I can and know they eventually must leave me. And my best parenting is to help them to learn to stand on their own 2 feet and know they are to be respected and know how to respect and share and care about others other than themselves. And, you know, so many parents unknowingly have frustrations in their own lives and want to raise their children to be or do what they wish they had been able to be or do in order to feel good about themselves. And that is a prescription for disaster. Our children have a right to define the paths, the ideas, the thoughts, the destiny that works for them. And that may not be what would work for us. And sometimes it isn't what we would even wish for them. That said, they will have healthier lives if they're able to find the road that's right for them, to fail, to learn, to get up and go, and know they can right their own mistakes. Oh, I wish I could tell you the number of people who have come into my office and said, my parents even picked the courses I was supposed to take at college, and in the end, I was living their life or their lives and not mine. Or the people who said, I met somebody and it never would have gotten serious, but my parents said, how dare you date that person? And that threw me into that person's arms because I wasn't going to tell my parents that ever that they were right about anything. It's that kind of thing, that balance between love and limits, that ability to know my child is in my care for a very short, precious time, and the best thing I can do as I love them is know I will let go of them. And people who know that as parents don't emotionally abuse their children.
And what I'm hearing you say is that it's not just what I think would be obvious. You know, if we're in a store or whatever and we hear someone screaming, you know, obscenities and cruel, humiliating things to a child, I think most people would say, wow, that's emotionally abusive. But what I'm hearing you say are things that I think a lot of parents do possibly out of good intentions or just their personal need to control that aren't necessarily might be what most people would consider to be obviously emotionally abusive, but they really are having a similar effect.
I mean, rage, silent or verbal expression of rage is emotionally abusive and terrifies a child, and we can get into that later. But overprotection and overindulgence and enmeshment, which means that I feel that this child is my possession and I'm going to raise that child to know that he or she can't love anybody more than he or she loves me. And people who do that, and it's done so frequently, mean their children well. They just don't understand that they're not the same person as the children that they're so blessed to have. So, I mean, people love their children the best way they know how, and most parents are so well-intended. Often you see that a child who's been really neglected grows into an adult who overprotects and overindulges so that they can make up for all they didn't have in their developmental years. And so they raise spoiled brats who don't know how to get along with other people, who make other people's lives miserable in a family, in a workplace. You know, all of us have worked with people who grow old without growing up and are bratty and dictatorial, and they can make a work situation impossible as well as a family situation.
Yes, and as you describe that, what I'm realizing, the dynamic that you just described is if a parent was emotionally abused and then they go to make up for it through the overindulgence and they create a brat who's demanding and hostile, they've almost created a new abuser, they're now getting emotionally abused by their child.
The child then feels that he or she owns them.
And
you know, they're the prince and the royalty of the. It gets very, very bad as the child grows older into an adolescent and a teenager. And that child suffers, often not always realizing it, and makes other people miserable. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's why I said earlier that the cycles of abuse, there's repeat in generations as they pass. They can combine with other cycles, and in addition to that, they are repetitive. You don't get out of this as generations pass unless somebody wakes up and says, hey, I'm going to stop this. This is not going to become a malignancy in my family. And, you know, is this a good time to really delineate and explain the various cycles, Jody, or should we wait?
Actually, we're ready to do that. Let's, because our break's due in just a couple minutes. Why don't we just go to break now, and then we can come back and cover that, because I feel like that's the real natural place to go next, and I don't want to have to interrupt it.
Great.
So let me just, you can get a drink of water for just a minute here.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just take a quick minute to welcome folks who have just joined and who may be interested in asking Sarah Kay questions. This is Parents Tool Talk. I'm your host, Jody Johnston Powell, author of The Parents Tool Shop. Our topic today is emotional abuse, and we're talking with Sarah Kay Smullins, who is a licensed social worker, certified family life educator, and best-selling author of two books, one called Whoever Said Life is Fair, and the other is Setting Yourself Free, Breaking the Cycles of Emotional Abuse in Family, Friendship, Love, and Work. If you want to ask any questions during the live show, we really encourage that, and we really would love to hear from you. You can either call 347-205-9654. That's 347-205-9654. Now, you can call in that number and just listen, but if you want to ask a question, hit the one key on your phone keypad to raise your hand, and then we'll see that you have your hand up. We'll call on you by the last four numbers of your phone number that you're calling in from, and then when you're done with your question, you just hit that one button to put your hand down again. The other way that you can ask a question, if you want to go to the chat room at ParentsToolTalk.com. Click on the play/chat button, and you can just type your question in, and my producer, Chris Gooley, is monitoring the chat room, and when we take breaks like this, he will let us know you've got a question, and we can have Sarah Kay answer that for you. I also want to let you know right now that we have quite a few bonus resources we're going to be telling you about, and if you'd like to get access to those that we send out after the show, we send them to our special Parents Tool Talk mailing list. In addition to links to our featured resources, both from Parents Tool Shop and our Guest of the Month, you'll also get information about upcoming shows, tips on downloading Parents Tool Talk recordings to your computer, subscribing to an RSS feed, and more. It's the only way to get exclusive information about future radio shows and access to special bonus resources and discounts that we only offer to our loyal listeners. So to sign up for the mailing list, just go to parentstooltalk.com/links. That's www.parentstooltalk.com/links, and that's L-I-N-K-S. And just know that I never share your private information with anyone for any reason. You do get put on the main Parents Tool Shop list and only on this extra list that you have signed up for. So I'd like to get back to our guest expert, Sarah Kay Smullins, and our topic today, confronting emotional abuse. And let's take a look now at what emotional abuse looks like, the different forms that it takes, and you can have kind of lead into some of what we've been alluding to so far.
Yeah, let me just take your listeners on a little trip with me for a brief moment so that they can understand how the cycles that I've delineated evolved in my own mind. I was a mother of two very little girls in the late 70s, and I thought I was in a very happy marriage. And one morning, I just couldn't get out of bed. And I didn't realize, really, that I was living in a constant state of humiliation. And I was able, from my bed, to call a psychiatrist who I had worked with at a hospital several years before. And that led to a long psychotherapy experience and a divorce, and it took a long time in Pennsylvania to get the divorce, which was under the threat of contest constantly, and I was very frightened and had no family to rely on or no financial resources, and I was really scared, and I began to keep a journal and wrote about people I had known who did not fall through the cracks when there was betrayal and unfairness and indignity in their lives, but somehow they made it, because I was determined to make it too, because I had two little girls. And I realized that what these people had in common was a state of dignity, a combination of pride and humility. They liked themselves, but they weren't the center of the universe. And my first book, Whoever Said Life is Fair, describes what dignity is and some of these people and how under great, great trauma, they refuse to give in to the part of them that says, give up and don't live and let go and abandon your kids and just run away from all this. And I didn't want to do that, but I didn't know how to handle my terror and fear. And so I kept that journal for 3 years, and I got a divorce, and I stood on my own 2 feet, and I raised my girls the best way I could, and I did a good job. And my first book came out of that experience, Whoever Said Life is Fair, is that book. And then when my life stabilized, I was very fortunate. I met a wonderful man who also had two children, and we made a real family. And you know when you have a real marriage, and you know if you face it when you have a sham. And it was such a joy. And then, Jody, I returned to my journal once again to figure out, since most parents love their kids the very best way they can, why don't more children have that sense of dignity, that ability to know they're important and other people are important too, and they deserve to be treated with respect and they know how to love others? And I realized that the culprit was emotional abuse. And there was just a flash, and all of my professional experience and my personal experience came together, and five cycles of abuse just flashed into my head. And here was what I realized. There is rage, which we began to talk about earlier. And rage is, of course, verbal or not verbal, but kids in that family fear expressing what they really want because they're scared. And there's also rejection and abandonment, where if they say something their parents or caretakers don't like, the love or care or relationship will be withdrawn from them, and they'll feel alone and frightened and isolated. And so, again, they lose all confidence and don't learn to express themselves. There also is severe neglect, where the child is just ignored, where there is no contact, where the child is really scapegoated in the family. And then there are the two that we spoke of earlier in more detail. Enmeshment, where children are raised to feel that, above all, they must be loyal and love their blood family. And it is a betrayal if they begin to love and want to know people who are outside of that blood link nuclear family. And then there is extreme overprotection and overindulgence, which we also spoke about. And that is where, in order to feel good about yourself and make up for what you didn't get, you just raise children who turn into little dictators and spoiled brats. The parents who, every time the child has a problem, rather than allowing the child to solve his or her problem and gain confidence that they can, is there to tell them what they should do and everything the child wants to own. And these are not just wealthy families. These are families sometimes who really are struggling, but financially and emotionally. But above all, if their kid wants something, they'll do without to give it to them. And this is so unhealthy, and this is emotionally abusive. So there are, in a little nutshell, if you will, the five cycles that grew out of my journey to try to understand, when parents really do love their kids the best way they know how, what is it that gets in the way of giving the children the confidence that they deserve as they begin to realize that they must face the world as emerging adults?
Wow, it really can take a lot of forms. Let me review what I heard as, because I don't know that I caught where one went into five. I've got rage.
And then rejection, abandonment.
Okay, that was a separate one.
Severe neglect.
Okay.
Enmeshment, where the family has to be one big blob and outsiders are not welcome. And then the fifth is extreme overprotection and overindulgence.
Okay, all right.
Now, they can combine. Sometimes you can get, yeah. But that's a more crystallized expression and definition.
And it sounds like each one of those has some unique dynamics to it, and also consequences or effects on the people who are the victims of that type of abuse. It would result in different kinds of symptoms or feelings or outcomes for them.
Oh, yes. Again and again, for instance, I see an enmeshed young person who, if he or she does manage to free himself or herself from parents, will then be attracted to one who abandons or rejects, because they feel that with that kind of person, at least they can breathe. Or someone who grows up with rage and is so frightened of contact could pick someone who will severely neglect them, because the initial attraction feels like peace. And then they realize how lonely they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if they almost can get used to that kind of treatment and feel that they deserve it, then they would blame themselves rather than recognizing that something might be going on. with the
exactly.
other person.
The pain remains, the diminished feelings remain, the isolation remains, but the form of the abuse often changes.
Okay. So we did have a question from our chat room, and maybe we can take a few minutes to help people who either want to change, that maybe they recognize something within themselves, or also if they are in a relationship themselves. So let's talk a little bit, give some information and some practical suggestions for people that they can do for themselves, depending on which side of that they're on. Our question from the chat is, what are some of the steps to correct the actions that could be emotionally abusive, or how to deal with the emotions in a productive and healthy way?
Well, the first thing is to be brave enough to see that you are doing something that could harm other people. And if people could see that, our world would be a totally different place.
Yeah.
And I really applaud the person who's asking this question, because the first step is wanting to see. And, you know, if you go on my website, there are questions you can ask yourself about your parenting or about what you're enduring that can help you to see it. And the book Setting Yourself Free, the second book that I wrote after Whoever Said Life Is Fair, can help you to see. And, you know, the hardest thing isn't understanding this. It's letting yourself see that you're doing something that's hurting other people.
Mm-hmm.
And, as I said, our world would be a totally different place if more people were able to do that.
And if someone does realize that what they're doing may be harmful, what could they do to start changing what they're doing? Because the feelings may still be there, but it
right.
would be a matter of how they handle their feelings differently.
Right, right. Well, I teach something to my clients that and in my parenting classes that I call an inner self dialogue, and I help them to learn if they're enraged about something, rather than frighten people, learn to talk about what they're enraged about. You see, what happens in these abusive situations is that if you live with rage, you never get to understand what it is you're angry about, and you just blow, because you're not used to being able to accept it in yourself and express it, so that you reach a boiling point without even knowing what it is that's going on inside of you. So, you just have to learn to respect yourself enough to say, now, what is it I'm really angry about, and how can I communicate it to the person without terrifying themselves the way I was terrified? And, you know, when I see a parent screaming at a child, when I live in downtown Philadelphia, and I think in all communities we see it, and I see it, and I don't ever go up to a parent and say, oh my goodness, you can't talk to your child that way, because then I know that parent will go home and abuse that child, or things could get ugly in the setting where I'm trying to talk. So what I do is this, Jody. I know that every time a parent screams like that, it's because that's the way he or she has been treated. And so I quietly try to follow this parent and child, and at a time when things have calmed down, I go up to the mother or the father or the caretaker or the grandparent or whomever, and I say, and I always mean it because children are so precious and are our hope and our future, I say something like, I have been watching your child, and that your child is such a beautiful child. I just think you are so blessed to have that child. And it has never failed that the parent, in getting that love and approval that they've never gotten in their own lives, which is why they're freaking out in such a terrifying way, they look at the child so differently, like, oh my goodness, this is my beautiful, precious child. I've seen parents put an arm around a child, take a child's hand, and, you know, it's a journey of learning, and it's the parents who are determined to learn who will raise healthy kids. You know, and I know, and I think most of your listeners know, we don't have to be perfect. I mean, I've lost patience with my kids. We all do that. That's fine. I mean, and then we apologize and we say, let's talk about this, what happened, what went wrong. It's when it's a consistent pattern and cycle that is the first response where children are constantly terrified in a home. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And if I can put in my 2 cents worth to that chat question, because we actually have more chat questions flowing in from the chat room. But if I could put in my 2 cents, and it kind of picks up where you left off in terms of how, you know, having that inner self dialogue and how to handle emotions, the Keep Your Cool tool set, and it, which is Chapter 9 in the Parents Tool Shop, and I also have a teleseminar on that. And I have a full, for those people who are local in my area, I also have a 6-week class called The Inner Secrets of a Stress-Free Life. And we talk about how to handle what's the cause of emotions and looking at that internal dialogue and beliefs and how that plays into our emotions and how to deal with that. And then also the Parents Tool Shop book would pick up with in terms of how to express yourself, you know, once you've managed your emotions, how to speak differently. Because I would imagine that if we've been emotionally abused, or regardless of how we've been parented, unless we learn something different, we are going to tend to say whatever was said to us, and particularly when we're angry, even the most healthy, balanced parents, we all have our fallback style, which is when I kind of lose it and you know, my brain goes out and I just fall back, it tends to be whatever our parents did. So even parents who are really making strong efforts to change their parenting, if the stress level gets too bad or they get a really strong feeling of anger, sometimes they can fall back and into those old patterns. So, and I will be telling folks more about some of those resources during our next break. Let's take one more question before, I think we have time for that. Let's take some of these questions from the chat room. One question says, does the abusive partner sometimes become a more subtle manipulative abuser after the abused partner starts standing up and demanding respect?
Yeah, if one lives in an abusive situation, the partner who is so consistently abusive will have a million ways to voice his or her demeaning behaviors. So, oh yes, of course, I mean, I'd like to talk to the person who wrote in more detail, but it's not going to stop until the person who is so naturally abusive gets some help.
Mm-hmm.
A first step is to know in yourself that I'm not going to tolerate this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then to know if it's safe to say that, and that's not going to morph into physical or sexual violence. And I think every situation, though themes are the same, every situation is so different that when one is enduring this and trying to change and adjust this dangerous dance, it does help to talk to a professional to assess things very clearly and confidently and make sure that you're moving in a safe direction.
And
that's
and
the best response I can give to that.
Good.
I also should say that very frequently in extreme emotional abuse, if somebody feels, I can't take this anymore and says it, there is a honeymoon period. Sort of, and there's flowers and there's candy, or the metaphor for flowers and candy and whatever you want, dear, and then it starts again. And that happens with physical and sexual violence, too. There's a honeymoon period following an eruption of, I can't take this anymore. But it's not going to change unless the person understands that he or she is doing it and the person enduring it understands that I don't have to live this way. I forgot to say one thing about rage, which is very important. Sometimes you're raised in a family where your parents mean you well, they just don't know how to be parents, and the only way you know how to reach them is to yell. You learn to scream to reach them, and it works. But then you take that to your new family where it's not going to work as well.
Mm-hmm.
So one has to be aware. Sometimes screaming is the only way that one in a family where people don't mean to hurt, but they're just so damaged, it's the only way they can hear.
Yeah.
It's so, I just want to say that because I would think at least some of your listeners will know what I'm talking about.
Yes, and as you were describing the honeymoon period and then things
right.
go better and there's all the promises, and it reminded
right.
me of what we often see with addictive behaviors with an alcoholic
yes.
or a drug addiction.
Exactly.
And then that led me to think of something that we learn in the stress-free class, which is in terms of how thoughts create emotions and which
uh-huh.
creates chemicals. And then when those emotions are experienced frequently, the cells actually build more receptor sites for it. And
uh-huh.
even at a cellular level, our body gets so used to those chemicals that we
uh-huh.
actually get addicted to our emotions. And so it's almost as though the emotionally abusive person can become addicted to being able to control, being able to intimidate other people, and
mm-hmm.
being able to stop. I can see it almost, you're describing almost a similar cycle as addiction, but people can have emotional addictions too. And if they don't learn,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and so unless
right.
that abuser learns something different, it's going
right.
to be very easy for them to fall back into that, and it's almost going to feel much more satisfying and natural for them to do
right.
that because they don't have something to replace it with or have something healthier.
Exactly. It's the feeling that this is what I can do to control my world.
Yeah.
And this is the only way I know how to control my world and, in addition, my pain. Because people who do this, just like people addicted to alcohol or drugs or compulsive sexual experiences, which have nothing to do with love or sex, but a way to feel powerful. This is a way that people can feel powerful and ease their pain. And all people who do this are in enormous pain. They just don't understand it, and
right.
they hurt other people horribly.
Yeah, and it's difficult to look at an abuser with compassion from that perspective. We do actually have another question, but we're at 40 after, and I do want to get a chance to tell people how to get some of the resources that we've mentioned, because that's really where they can get more practical advice and suggestions and can really explore this more on their own. And we've mentioned several of them already, so I would like to tell them about it. Sarah Kay, if you just want to get a sip of water, Chris and I are going to make a few announcements, and then we will come back with that other chat question right after the break. It is about 42 after the hour, and for those of you who have just joined us, this is Parents Tool Talk. I'm your host, Jody Johnston-Powell of the Parents Tool Shop, and today we're talking with Sarah Kay Smullins on the subject of confronting emotional abuse. If you have any questions during the live show, you can either call in at area code 347-205-9654 and then hit the 1 key on your phone keypad to raise your hand. Or you can send us a question using the chat room at www.parentstooltalk.com. And while I'm going to check the switchboard to see if anyone who's called in is raising their hand, I'm going to have my producer go ahead and give you some important information about the featured resources we've been mentioning this month. Can you take it over, Chris?
Sure, Jody. We have a number of resources to talk about today, so let's get right to it. We'll start with resources from our guest, Sarah Kay Smullins. We've mentioned Sarah Kay's books several times already in the program, Setting Yourself Free and Whoever Said Life is Fair. Let's start by describing Whoever Said Life is Fair. Sarah Kay already described beautifully really what was behind her writing that book, and I'm just going to say a few more words on that. Whoever Said Life is Fair accompanies readers on a journey of self-discovery from thoughts and attitudes to how they compare with the circumstances of life. This inspiring book will help readers learn about survival, no matter how difficult the circumstances. Also, a few words about her book, Setting Yourself Free. Setting Yourself Free is a guide to the confrontation of painful emotional injuries, placing the past in perspective, letting go of old hurts, and grasping new opportunities for happiness in love, family, friendships, and work. This book was a 20-year effort that identifies the five cycles of emotional abuse that Sarah Kay mentioned earlier that begin in childhood and without intervention can destroy potential and opportunities of individuals, marriages, friendships, and communities with dangerous social implications. Both of these books are available for sale at Sarah K. Smolens' website. That's www.sarahkaysmolens.com, SarahKaySmulens.com. And she has excerpts of both of these books for you to check out as well. Sarah K. would also like listeners to check out two articles on her website, Developing an Emotional Sense of Direction, and The Codification and Treatment of Emotional Abuse in Structured Group Therapy. Once again, her website is sarahkaysmolens.com. And for the next month, you can also find links to her resources, as well as the Emotional Abuse Inventory handout that she mentioned earlier. We went out and grabbed a link to that. You can find links to all of these resources at www.parentstooltalk.com/links. Now let's talk just a little bit about Jody's featured resources for the month. Jody would like to direct our attention to 3 one-hour teleseminars that very strongly relate to our topic today. The first is The Controversy Surrounding Corporal Punishment, featuring Dr. Kirby Alvey of the National Effective Parenting Initiative. This teleseminar covers what research says about the effectiveness of corporal punishment and what discipline tools every parent wants and needs to have at their disposal. Next, we have Take the Bite Out of Discipline, which shows how to calmly and effectively discipline children without being the bad guy, while at the same time teaching self-discipline to children. And finally, we have the teleseminar, Keep Your Cool with Effective Stress and Anger Management. And in this teleseminar, Jody and a group of committed parents, which every teleseminar is a discussion with Jody and a group of committed parents, they discuss the latest information and scientific breakthroughs about what really causes anger and stress, how to break the cycle of emotional reactions, respond to situations helpfully, and even prevent stress from occurring. And each of these teleseminars is available for download at the Parents Tool Shop website. And before you order, you can also listen to a 5-minute sample of each teleseminar at no cost. And last but not least, we have 4 free articles that Jody is highlighting this month on communication and discipline. And for the next month, once again, all of these links to these resources can be found at www.parentstooltalk.com/links. That's www.parentstooltalk.com/links. And now I'll hand things back over to you, Jody.
Okay, great. And while we were doing that, I checked the switchboard. There is a caller who has her hand up. I did promise the person in chat that we'd come back to her or his question first. So, and it may be a short one. I'm not sure. Sarah Kay can let us know. So let me ask that, and then I will go to our person on the switchboard who has her hand up. The question from the chat room, welcome back, Sarah. Sarah Kay.
Oh, hi, I'm here. I'm listening so intensely.
Okay. All right, next question. Do you think that a high percentage of abusers have personality disorders?
I don't like to categorize people that way. I think abusers have suffered terribly and have learned to hurt other people and have learned to get joy out of hurting others, because this is the only way they feel in control of their own rage and pain. And in my work with abusive people, I go very slowly and they learn to trust me and we uncover their abuse and pain and they change. So, I mean, I don't like diagnostic labels. I hate to give them even on insurance forms. I think people are just too complicated and potentially exquisite to be labeled in a way like, you know, they're this or that or the other thing. Humankind is very complicated, and people who are the most unkind have been treated the most unkindly.
Mm-hmm.
And if everybody could understand these cycles and treat their kids in a way where there's balance between love and limits, we could see this ending. So that's the best way I know how to answer that.
Yeah, and sometimes when there's a label like that, I get a little bit concerned that someone will either excuse it, oh, well, they have a personality disorder, or that it may lead them to think that, well, then they can't change.
Yeah, that's right. That, you know, I'm living with a hopeless cripple here, and it can't get better. Sometimes it can. It's not going to get better if the person who is demeaning you isn't going to see what he or she is doing. It's not going to get better, and nobody should live that way.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of sad, lonely, left people in the world because they never learn that they're sad and lonely because they don't know how to treat other people.
Let's go to the next caller. Let's go to our caller. And Chris, if you can check on the switchboard and unmute the person whose last the last four numbers of their phone number is 3976.
Sure, Jody, here we go. So caller with the last four numbers in your phone number, 3976, you are on the air. What's your question?
Hi, my question was how you could help an adult sibling or an adult child understand the abuse cycle they're in with boyfriends and husbands and try to get them out, especially when the person has no money for expensive counseling and that kind of thing.
Oh, yes. Well, the first step is I hear the kindness in your voice and just be there. And usually if somebody's involved, does this person you're talking about know that he or she is in an abusive situation?
I think in the back of her mind she does, but she doesn't kind of accept it because she's still living with that person.
Right. Usually people who stay with abusive people are used to it, and down deep in them they feel, I have such little confidence that I'm scared to death to be alone, often for financial reasons or religious reasons, but down deep in their deepest core they feel they deserve this abuse, and also it's contact that they're used to and feels better than aloneness because they don't have the confidence and ability to stand on their own two feet. The best thing we can do is learn to stand on our own two feet before we pick a partner to build with. But that always doesn't always happen, and some lucky people pick people with whom they can grow, but you're describing something different. Also, there are resources in family service agencies in most communities that you can access for a very minimal amount of money. Social work agencies, hospitals can direct you to clinics. A religious leader whom you trust could direct you to resources. Most fields offer high-quality pro bono work. I know I've done it for years. There are resources that are affordable if you look around a little bit, but the fact that this person in your life has you is very important. Just be there. Just be there. And encourage the person to trust you and talk and don't preach or lecture. And if it ever evolves in a conversation that she can say, I'm suffering, just say, let's find somebody for you to talk with because I don't want you to hurt this badly. And I understand the stress you're living with. And I'm here for you day and night. I want you to know that. You can call me anytime. Does that make sense to you? Am I responding
yes,
to your situation?
Yes, that's actually spot on with what she's going through. So I appreciate it.
Good. Thank you.
I'm glad you
Thank
called.
Thank you for asking your question. And if you just want to hit your one key again, your hand will go down on the switchboard, and then if you should have a question later, you will, and you hit the one again, then we'll know that you have a second question. However, we're getting very close to the end, and I actually want to ask a question that kind of tees off of our last caller's question, because her question was about an adult sibling. And so this was an adult that, what about if someone knows a family or another family member where the emotional abuse is going on to a child that they see? It's not their child, you know, maybe it's their sister's child or their grandchild that's going through emotional abuse. How might that, because what I heard you saying was be there with them, be supportive. When you've got a parent involved there, how might your advice be different if that was a child instead of an adult? What ways can adults be supportive of children that they know are being emotionally abused or suspect, believe?
You have to be careful confronting a parent, as we said earlier, because then the child could be in danger. Build a relationship with the child. I can't tell you how many people come into my office and say, my neighbor, my aunt, my uncle saved my life, because whenever they saw me, they made me feel good and they made me feel safe and I could visit them and spend time with them and have meals with them and have overnights with them. So build a relationship with that child. Always let the child know how respectful you are. And how caring you are and how available you are, and build a relationship with the abusive parent in the same way that I recommended to your last caller. And just remember that when you are with one who is abused, that person has been abused, and usually they don't know any other outlet. But friendship and caring and love is the best healer.
Okay. And let's just say that if you believe that the child's safety or health is in jeopardy, then at that point
right. You
would
yes.
want to call and refer them for child protective services.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
If you feel the child's in danger. Yes.
And
yes.
with that comment.
Thank you, yes.
We're down to our last 3 minutes, so let me do a little bit of wrap-up. And while I do that, Sarah Kay, why don't you be thinking about if there's any points you didn't get to say or any final comments, you'll have maybe just 30 to 60 seconds maybe to say that before the ending show music hits. So I'll give you a quick second to think of that. Our guest today has been Sarah Kay Smullins, and we've been talking about confronting emotional abuse. And I so appreciate all the insights and practical advice that you've given us, Sarah Kay. I do want to remind foster parents to remember to check out from the call to get your continuing education hours, either by sending a chat and verifying that you were on for the whole call, or if you were calling in, stay on the line until you hear a recording that the show has stopped, and we will be seeing that your phone number was still on there, and then you can send a reminder email to an email to questions@parentstooltalk.com, and we can verify that your phone number was, in fact, live during the entire call. Remember to check out Sarah Kay's website. It's www.sarahkaysmullins.com. You can go there directly, or for the next month, you can find all the links to this month's resources by going to parentstooltalk.com/links. And if you're not already on our mailing list, you can sign up while you're there. That web address is, again, parentstooltalk.com/links. And you can also subscribe to Parents Tool Talk through iTunes by going to the same links page and subscribing, clicking on the subscribe link. Or you can go to the iTunes store and type in Parents Tool Talk in the search window. Thanks again, Sarah Kay, for joining us. Any final comments you want to make until the exit music starts to play?
Just that if you're suffering, please reach out to someone you trust. And if you see suffering, try to be there for the person. If you see a child on a street who's being treated badly, at an appropriate time, tell the parent how beautiful that child is and you've been watching, and say it kindly, because that person who hurts the most has been treated unkindly. And thank you so much for letting me talk about a topic that has been so important in my work and in my life.
Well, thank you so much for Sarah Kay joining us today. This is a really important topic, and I think it is very invisible, and I think you've helped us really shine the light into that darkness and help us see more what's going on, and most of all, given us hope for what we can do for others. So thank you again, and thank you to all of you who are listening for joining us today on Parents Tool Talk. I'm Jody Johnson-Powell, and you can learn more about Parents Tool Shop at parentstoolshop.com. I hope you can join us on our next program, which will be Friday, May the 14th at 12 noon Eastern, when my guest expert will be Shannon Rios, and we'll be talking about her new book, The 7 Fatal Mistakes Divorced and Separated Parents Make. Until then, I wish you all a great weekend and a great month to follow. Take care.